This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America. And if you haven't noticed lately, inflation has been a watchword both in the United States and around the world, as recently we've seen a big jump in commodity prices, shortages of key materials like semiconductors, and other pressures that have pushed up prices for everything from homes to appliances. Is inflation indeed transitory, as the Federal Reserve has suggested, or are we in a commodity price supercycle, as others might suggest as well? Joining us now to discuss that is James Luke. He is fund manager of commodities at Schroders, joining us from London. James, good to have you. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Ron. Thanks for having me.
Okay, before we get directly into commodities, the jump that we've seen, although there's been a clear retracement in some commodities, has obviously prompted a very broad discussion worldwide about the reemergence of inflation. In that context, how do you see the world right now? Do you agree with the U.S. Federal Reserve that inflation, particularly that inflation that's driven by commodity prices, is transitory, or is there something more permanent or persistent going on right now?
I think, Ron, the only honest answer to that is that given that we're coming out of a quite unprecedented crisis, I think anyone who truly claims to be able to forecast the precise level of inflation over the next 6 to 12 months is probably pushing the limits of credibility. So from our perspective, you know, we think it's quite possible that overall inflation readings, as we get through the base effects of Q1 and Q2 last year, could come off a bit into year end. So to that extent, people like Chairman Powell and the broad consensus, which is calling for very much a transitory period of inflation, will appear correct. I think from our perspective, we think that what's most interesting about what's happened in the post-COVID world is the nature of the policy response and the way that policy response contrasts to what we saw post-2008. So from our perspective, we think we are moving into a more inflationary era. And the key reason for that is when we look post-2008, we see a heavy, heavy reliance on monetary policy stimulus. The really heavy work was done by quantitative easing, which flowed directly into financial asset prices, particularly bond markets. Our view on a midterm structural basis is that we have now moved into a new era of macro policy, where we will see much stronger coordination of monetary policy and fiscal policy. And we think that fiscal policy impulse, which we think we're going to see on a global basis, is key to the inflation outlook. So yes, we do think we're moving into a more inflationary era.
Okay, so let me ask you with respect then, with specific respect to commodities. It's interesting that against that backdrop, commodities are not behaving in a monolithic fashion. On the one hand, you've got oil, which touched $76 in the U.S. and has now pulled back $5. But then you've got copper, which is down about, you know, 10-20%. And then lumber is down $1,000 per 1,000 board feet. It's completely collapsed. So how in the world of commodities does a different inflation regime treat the price of stuff?
I mean, I think you just have to contrast. You know, the first point to make is commodities are only one part of the inflation picture. So if you contrast developed markets to emerging markets, for example, the weight that commodity type products have in the inflation basket is vastly different. In developed markets, basically the cost of labor, services inflation is much more important in the composition of inflation. In emerging markets, you know, commodities, you know, consumables, everyday staple goods make up a bigger portion. But what I would say specifically in terms of commodities, you have to distinguish between cyclical factors and factors which have driven prices up simply because you've seen a supply bottleneck and you've seen to use the Fed's language, a transitory squeeze in supply and demand. And I think lumber is a great example of that. And then you have to pass out of that. What are the midterm and long-term structural drivers? So I think we are going to see heightened volatility as some of these kind of short-term COVID-related supply and demand shocks get squeezed out. But then I think overall, some of the structural trends that we're seeing in commodities do suggest that we're going to see potentially much higher prices going forward for a number of reasons. So, for example, the reason I think lumber was such an exceptional example is because of the way that household behavior changed, particularly in the US, in response to COVID fiscal packages, high disposable income, high savings, but also a complete lack of mobility. The amount of things like household renovation that's taken place has been exceptional. So that's created a short-term spike in demand, which the market hasn't been able to respond to or wasn't able to respond to. But as ever in these situations, when you get a short-term extreme spike, the other side of those spikes, when inventories do become ample, and when you get ultimately a buyer strike or stocks are sufficient, that the downside can be brutal too.
Yeah, and we've seen that. Now, can the downside be brutal in something like oil? So we've seen OPEC or OPEC Plus now kind of splinter to an extent. On the one hand, the UAE and some of the other producers would like to up the production. U.S. frackers may slowly come back online. There's an old line in your business that higher prices are the cure for higher prices. Is it possible that we see that in something like oil as well?
I think that is basically the critical question for the asset class. And I think when we contrast the commodity markets today, particularly metals markets, for example, but most importantly, crude oil markets and energy markets to previous commodity cycles. The one thing that we see absolutely clearly is that the supply response to higher prices is being, if not broken, then significantly distorted by the current extreme focus on ESG and climate change mitigation. So if you look at some of the work that we've done and people like Mark Lacey and his team have done within Schroders, they show quite clearly that the supply response in terms of incremental investment from publicly listed oil companies in the US, the incremental willingness of the major oil companies, the integrated companies, to invest in kind of long duration oil assets has completely collapsed in a way that is unprecedented. So in a normal oil cycle, you would, if you showed a chart of oil prices and capex on a lagged basis, they would obviously have a close relationship. Today you're seeing a very large gap open up between the two, with capex staying muted, but prices rising. So to your question, do high prices cure high prices? Well, not if there isn't a supply response.
Right. And to that end as well, there's a regulatory response around the world putting pressure on fossil fuel usage. And so it rather perversely, as countries try to shift to greener sources of energy, it's exacerbating that very trend that you just described.
I think on the demand side, it's also very, very interesting, isn't it? Because I guess essentially what we're talking about is a duration mismatch. Mm-hmm. Because it's governments are fairly loathed in the short term to force consumers to aggressively change their consumption habits if it's punitive on those consumers, because it's politically very difficult to do. So you have consumers who in the short term have a demand level which is quite sticky, and yet you have the supply side which invests on a 10 to 20 year basis, sometimes longer. Which is facing significant pressure, and so I think that's the reason why. Look, if you look to the very long term, and you believe, as we do, that governments globally are very committed to their climate mitigation targets, then it's obviously very hard to have a positive view on where crude oil demand is going in the long term. Mm-hmm. But again, if you forecast on a kind of 5-year view, There aren't any sensible forecasts that think crude oil demand has already peaked. There are multiple forecasts based on current investment rates that suggest crude oil production is going to be severely limited. So I think it's that duration mismatch that is becoming key and sets up the oil market for the potential of a super spike on a 2 to 5 year basis before then you go into terminal decline.
So James, going back to the last, if you will, super spike that we saw, let's say in the United States, where domestic crude here hit $147 a barrel, even in the midst of the great financial crisis, there were people calling for $200 or better. We discussed peak oil theory, and then fracking really took off and drove the price of oil substantially lower. When you're talking about super spike, what exactly do you mean in price terms?
I mean, from my perspective, Ron, when I say super spike, I think of all-time record prices. And I think commodity markets, when they get to very tight conditions, they can move in exceptionally extreme ways. So from my perspective, I mean a spike way, way above the cost of production and above previous highs. That would count as a super spike in my mind. And there's no reason that previous highs would necessarily be the limit to that. As we've seen in markets like gold and copper, that previous all-time highs are not necessarily a ceiling.
Now, let me ask you about the precious metals and industrial metals, and not to get off oil, because if indeed we see $200 oil, that's both inflationary and constrictive when it comes to economic growth. But since you bring up metals,
I should just be clear that on the oil side, that's not, you know, we're not suggesting that's, you know, absolutely imminent. What we're suggesting is over a kind of 2 to 5 year period, if those underlying supply and demand trends play out as is currently indicated, then that is very, very possible.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Okay, you also brought up or hinted at precious and industrial metals. There's been a kind of a split in their behavior of late. Where do you think they're going?
I think you have to separate out the short term from the midterm. So we feel that, for example, in the second half of this year, industrial metals, so things like copper and nickel, will struggle to outperform, and we think precious metals will do well. We think in the midterm, we think both subsectors, so both base metals and precious metals, will do exceptionally well, but for very, very different reasons. So in terms of, you know, the kind of tactical picture which I talked about, you know, one of the things that we said at the beginning of this call was that, of course, there have been some exceptional cyclical circumstances which have arisen because of the COVID crisis. And actually, when we look at a market like copper, we think copper is one example of that. So as no doubt you've been aware, if you look at developed market data, because of the way the COVID crisis has been handled in the West, and because of the way mobility has been restricted, but incomes have not been restricted to anywhere like the same extent, you've seen an exceptional surge in goods demand. Yeah. And I think that the reversal of that surge, so the substitution of goods demand for services demand, as we go into the second half of this year and into 2022, is on a relative basis at least more positive for other commodity subsectors, and not so much for markets like copper. I think the other thing I would point to is, you know, if you look at a market like copper or an industrial metal, then a surprisingly large portion of that market comes from scrap supply. So scrap metal and copper, for example, is about 30% of total demand. And again, if you think about what's happened over the last year, you know, you had a period of very low copper prices, had a period of low industrial production, but most importantly, you had significant limitations on mobility. So for parts of that period, you've had an incentive to kind of collect and sort and sell scrap. In many cases, you haven't been able to, and that's created a real bottleneck. And I think over time, that bottleneck is also going to be released, which can loosen the market a bit in the short term. I think in the long term, the links between industrial metals And the energy transition are very, very clear and very, very striking, both on the demand side and on the supply side. So I think on the demand side, the thesis is well known: electrification, use of industrial metals in, say, wind and solar, in electric vehicles, in electric grids, is high. And overall intensity of use should increase quite substantially, in fact. But I think it's on the supply side that potentially the impact of decarbonization is being underestimated. So if you look at a market like aluminium, which over the last, really 10 to 15 years plus has been consistently oversupplied, actually, you're now in a situation where, because aluminium has a very, very high carbon footprint in general, the ability or the willingness of producers to add more capacity is being severely limited. And nowhere is that more apparent than in China, which has been the absolute dominant supplier over the last 15 years plus. And that is very much a seismic change, which basically suggests that, if you really want to balance the aluminium market in the midterm, in a world where all of a sudden the Chinese are capping their own production rates, then you're going to need higher prices to incentivize new capacity elsewhere.
Let me ask you two final questions. First, before we get off the inflation topic, are commodities still a good hedge against future inflation?
Well, we think that if you look at the data, empirically, then historically they have been. So yes, we think they do remain an important diversifier, an important hedge in a portfolio. And I think what we would say is, we're not, we've lived through commodity bull markets and we've lived through commodity bear markets. So we have our eyes wide open. We know that returns can go both ways. What we would say is, the question to ask to anyone looking at the asset class is, well, are the conditions in place for sustained relative outperformance of commodities versus other asset classes, most obviously equities? And, if you look at a chart of commodity total returns versus equity total returns, then we are at an extremely low level. And if you compare the environment that we have today with, say, the early 2000s, there are some obvious similarities. We've come through a period of very restrained capital investment. We've got very, very high tech valuations, very high equity valuations in general. And also we have a coming CapEx boom. In the 2000s, we were coming into an emerging markets boom and a China boom in particular in terms of industrialization and urbanization. And I think now we're coming into a global climate mitigation CapEx boom, and I think that is a cocktail of conditions which suggest that from a macro perspective, relative returns could stay pretty healthy in commodities.
Right. Final question. Obviously, we at Schroders talk quite a bit about sustainability. We talk about environmental impact, and the commodity business writ large has never been known for being environmentally friendly. So, is there a way in which you square that circle around what is increasingly a mandate from investors to be more environmentally conscious, knowing that the commodity business has, for lack of a better description, been a little dirtier than others?
Fundamentally, you are correct that there are parts of the commodity business which are fundamentally extractive, and they always will be. Energy production, metals production, is an extractive enterprise, but there are also other parts of the commodity story which are actually very much required for some of these climate mitigation initiatives to be successful. So, for example, if you look out to 2030, then the amount of nickel used in EVs as a percentage of total nickel demand could rise from very low levels today, to upwards of 30-40%, which is an absolutely seismic shift. So there are kind of very much positives and negatives in terms of commodities and ESG.
All right, James, a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for being with us today. James Luke, fund manager of commodities for Schroders, joining us from London. That does it for today's U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana. Hope you enjoy the rest of the day and the week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.